Welcome to this week's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga from Cleveland.com, joined as always by our Tribe beat writer, Paul Hoynes. Paul, another week of getting ready for the hot stove to really heat up. You expect a lot of movement to maybe start happening as we get a little closer to the winter meetings in December?
Yeah, I think it'll coming off the GM meetings and the owners meetings, there's usually some trades that are made just before the winter meetings, which are from, I believe, December 9th through the 13th in Las Vegas. And then after, you know, that 2 week period after that, Joe, that, you know, that's when a lot of trades are made as well. But the Indians kind of kick things off. I mean, Seattle, Jerry DePoto beat everybody to the punch as usual with, the Malik Smith deal.
Mm-hmm.
But the Indians are kind of right on their heels yesterday.
Well, you go from Trader Jerry out there to, the Indians announced a 5-player deal with Pittsburgh yesterday. It was Jordan Luplo and Max Moroff are joining the Indians. And the Indians say goodbye to Eric Gonzalez, a utility infielder who's been with the organization for almost a decade and is really, you know, never was a guy who never really was able to reach his full potential because of the guys who were ahead of him blocking him.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked I like Gonzo. I like him as a person, like him as a player. Kind of saw him grow up. I mean, he's a big dude now. Man. Mm-hmm. He's like 6'4". He looks like he could still fill out. I think, not playing really kind of hurt him last year. You could tell at the end of the year his defense got a little sloppy. But I think he's going to get a shot to play maybe every day at shortstop or be in the competition in Pittsburgh for a middle infield job. He's got a great arm, natural shortstop. He wasn't going to play here with Lindor. So it's still kind of an interesting trade. I don't know how much it moves the needle. It doesn't move the needle much for me, but who knows? You know, Moroff is a switch hitter with a little bit of pop and Luplo, a right-handed hitter, which they need. So we'll see how it goes.
As the trade was being announced to us, or we got sort of a heads up on it. Hey, there's a move coming. It's about a 3.5 out of 10 was how the move was characterized.
Yeah. That's like, I always like, is that the Richter scale of trade?
Well, it was funny because the timing of it, we got the notice and they said the move would be announced at 4:20 PM yesterday. And I thought it had to be something about Bauer. I thought, oh man, they signed Bauer or they got an extension because, you know, that just in reference to Bauer's affinity for certain numbers.
Oh yeah. Right. Right. I didn't even think about that.
That really got my radar up when that happened. But, you know, just really briefly and what the return was for the Indians on that trade, Jordan Luplo, like you said, right-handed hitting, corner outfielder primarily. Antonetti seems to think he can play center field, but, this isn't maybe necessarily a guy who's blessed with a lot of speed. He did have 4 triples in the last 2 seasons with Pittsburgh as he played in 64 games. He started as an infielder and actually moved to the outfield because of some injuries. Hey, right-handed hitting corner outfielder who has a history of minor injuries. The Indians just replaced Brandon Guyer with Brandon Guyer.
Yeah, he'll fit in perfect here. Does he get hit with a lot of pitches?
Well, we'll see. But I guess the hope for the Indians is that he develops into a guy who puts the ball in play a little more than the 194 batting average would indicate. And the other thing about Luplo, I mentioned to you before, he was a college roommate, teammate of Aaron Judge from the Yankees. So maybe you can get inside the mind of the enemy there with Luplo if you can figure out what a number of ways to harass Aaron Judge as he comes to the plate against the Indians.
Yeah, and he's great uncle of Al Luplo, former Indian outfielder who just passed away, was his great uncle. He So, you know, so there's a little, some roots there, you know, the little connection there with Cleveland and Pittsburgh. They both played in Pittsburgh as well.
Right. As far as Max Moroff goes, interesting thing I found, we dug up about him. 2005, he and Dante Bichette Jr. were on the Florida team representing the in the Little League World Series. So very interesting. He actually got to go back and play in Williamsport in the 2017 big league game that they have in association with the Little League World Series. So a lot of fun for him. But yeah, this is a guy who's I dug up an old photo of him as a 12-year-old playing in the Little League World Series.
That's great
package. So very interesting. He sounds like a guy, you know, your typical switch hitter, infield utility guy who actually can put the ball in play. Luplo and Moroff were both named Pirates Minor League Players of the Year. Moroff in 2015 and Luplo in 2017. So, you know, there's something there. It's just a matter of will they be able to produce at the big league level for the Indians.
Yeah, and Luplo has one option left, so he can go back down. Moroff is out of options, so he's going to, you know, they're going to be have to make a decision with him at the end of spring training. But I would think it sounds like he might, you know, kind of step in for Gonzalez as at least a candidate for the utility job to move around a little bit.
So yeah, like you said, you know, not necessarily a move that that sort of makes the needle jump, but. If you're thinking about adding outfield depth and, you know, plugging a hole with a more controllable player in terms of the utility infield guy, I guess they accomplished that and killed two birds with this one move.
Yeah, and they need numbers, Joe. They need numbers in the outfield. They need some guys out there so they can make some decisions because, obviously, it doesn't look like Brantley or Rajah Davis or maybe even Melky Cabrera are coming back. So, and, you know, you like I think you pointed out today, you know, Zimmer and Leonis Martin and Naquin are all, you know, we don't know just how ready they're going to be or when they're going to be, you know, able to play because of injuries and illness.
All right. Let's move on to the news from yesterday. Corey Kluber, as I think a lot of us pretty much figured and predicted when the finalists were announced for the American League Cy Young Award, Corey Kluber finishes third. Again, this is what, 4 years in a row he's finished in the top three.
Four
out of the last five, he's finished in the top three. I don't think a lot of people really once Trevor Bauer, you know, suffered his injury. I don't think a lot of Indians fans held out a lot of hope that, you know, one of the Indian starters was going to win the Cy Young Award. Kluber did come in and you know win 20 games and pitched the most innings in the American League. But Blake Snell, you know, pretty obvious choice there among the guys who were left standing at the end of the season.
Yeah, he was a dominant left-hander. Didn't pitch as, you know, I think, you know, obviously I think the way the voting has changed, you know, amongst the BBWA, I think, you know, being available every day or every 5 days may have lost some of its luster. He only pitched 180 innings. Kluber and Verlander pitched, you know, at least almost 40 innings each, more than him, you know. And they had, you know, Verlander struck out 290 guys, Snell 221, Kluber 222. But I think the fact that, you know, everyone says the win has been devalued, you know, as pitchers' wins have been devalued. But, you know, Snell still won 21 games on a team that, you know, didn't have a great rotation, that used the opener and the closer and, you know, 45 relievers, you know, every other start, it seemed like. So I think wins helped this guy. I think wins definitely helped him, you know, to win that and to win the Cy Young. And what I think he only gave up 10 hits with runners in scoring position all year. So he was pretty dominant. He beat the Indians twice and, they had no chance against him.
Right, and that, and I would go back to that. You know, just seeing him in two games against the Indians, he was electric in terms of the stuff that he threw out there, and you know, guys were swinging and missing, and he was hitting his spots. I think he did everything that you would expect a Cy Young Award winner to do. The only possible drawback would have been the number of innings, but again, he did have a little bit of an injury situation where he missed a few starts there. I have no problem with Blake Snell award winning the AL award. You might have a question about the NL winner though, Jacob DeGrom. He picks up his 11th win of the season in the postseason awards, I guess is the way you can put it.
Yeah, you know, very interesting that you know, this guy 10-7 maybe 10. Mm-hmm. I forget what his overall record, but he had, you know, the great ERA, led all the baseball. He had everything that you look for in a Cy Young winner, but you know, the number of wins, and as we said, you know, the wins, you know, can really, you know, kind of skewer the performance of a pitcher, you know, at least, you know, in the terms, you know, in the terms of the analytically, you know, the guys that lean toward the analytics. And this guy, you know, struck out over 200 guys, had a bunch of innings. He only allowed 4 runs in one start. That was the most earned runs he allowed in any start. 33, 34 starts, pitched on a bad club, you know, really 3.5 runs. You know, he only received the lowest run support of any starter, 3.5 runs, an average of from his teammates. So, I think he was a legitimate National League candidate. I mean, a Cy Young candidate, NL Cy Young candidate. Was he better than Max Scherzer? I don't know. Max Scherzer struck out 300 guys. Mm-hmm. You know, it's only happened like 5 times since 2000. You know, 300, you know, that's like, you know, Bob Feller's stuff, you know, 300 strikeouts in a 5-man rotation. I mean,
300 strikeouts and you didn't win the Cy Young. 300 strikeouts and he didn't win the Cy Young. It's got to be a special circumstance then, right?
And you know, obviously, I think you know, DeGrom was a special circumstance, you know. But 10 wins, you know, the old school guy in me still kind of grates at that. But it is what it is, you know. I got over it. You know, I got over that when Felix Hernandez won it in 2010 with 13 wins. So I'm past that. I get it why these guys get votes, and I, you know, get it that there's, you know, lots of different ways to evaluate the accomplishments of a pitcher rather than wins.
Well, speaking of evaluating, let's pull on the GM cap and pull on the, you know, sit in Chris Antonetti's seat right now, and let's evaluate, let's give assign value to a guy like a Corey Kluber. Like we said, he's finished at least in the top 3-4 out of the last 5 years in Cy Young voting. And the rumors are out there. The situation is obvious that the Indians are possibly looking to, you know, add depth to the roster by trading a starting pitcher, possibly Kluber, possibly Carrasco. What would a guy like Kluber bring back in return, and what would the Indians demand in terms of a return for a guy like Kluber?
Well, I think you got to get at least 3 guys back, Joe, and you've got to get at least 2 of them have to be major league ready, maybe on the cusp of being major league ready. You've got to get 1 guy back that's under control, that is going to fill the biggest need on your roster, and he's got to be major league ready. Mm-hmm. You've got to get another arm back to not take Kluber's place, but, you know, maybe down the road take his place. And I think you've got to get at least the other teams like a top 5 or top 10 prospect. And that's at the very least, because I don't think you're ever going to get his value back. You know, you're not going to get equal value for Kluber. And, you know, I've had scouts tell me that he looks like a guy that's been pitched a lot, and he has been pitched a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the last 5 years he's pitched over, I think, 200, at least 203 innings a year, you know, over 200 strikeouts a year. This is a guy that's got some mileage on him. He's going to be 33 in April. So, you know, you take that into account, but he's also the face of your franchise pitching-wise. He's also probably one of the most accomplished pitchers in Indians history, and he's one of the top pitchers in the big leagues today. So if you're going to trade him, you can't miss.
And on top of all that, he's also, you know, probably the heart of your clubhouse. If Josh Tomlin moves on, obviously Josh Tomlin has been there forever, and you know, but they sit right next to each other in the clubhouse. And, you know, if Tomlin is one, then Kluber is 1A in terms of, you know, leadership and example and what you want in that clubhouse. If Kluber gets traded before the start of this season, how does that change things? What kind of void and what kind of vacuum does that leave the Indians if that happens?
That's a great question, Joe. I mean, you know, I know, you know, man, I was just, you know, Kluber, who's, oh God, I can't think of the guy that, but Kluber, yeah, he was the leader. He was definitely the leader on that club. To me, it's hard for a pitcher to be kind of, you know, like the everyday leader of a team just because they don't play every day. But I think in Kluber's case, he had earned that respect. And he wasn't. I don't think he was a rah-rah guy. I think he was a guy that did it by example. I think you know, he gave his team a chance to win every day. I think those pitchers followed him. There was a reason, you know. When any starter threw a bullpen session, all four starters, the other four or five starters were out there watching him. I think he was the reason behind that. And you lose a lot if you trade him. And you know, is Carlos Carrasco ready to do that? Is he ready to, you know, is Trevor Bauer, is who, you know, who is Lindor ready to step up and take control of the team? I don't know, but I think, you know, Kluber is the guy right now. You're losing Brantley. I think Brantley was a big guy among the position players. So yeah, there could be, you know, these guys have been through enough where I don't think a leader is the be all and end all, but there has to be a change in leadership in that clubhouse if you trade a guy like Kluber.
All right. Let's jump into some questions here. I know you had a few submitted, and then we got a couple from email. So what do you got off the top here?
Yeah, I've got one from Bob Strzok. He goes, "I believe we are witnessing the decline of the Indians. Money does matter." What's your take?
The decline of the Indians, three consecutive AL Central championships, starting staff under control until
2020.
You know, Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez, two of the top players in all of baseball overall. This is not a team in decline by any stretch of the imagination. You're still playing in the AL Central, which is the Indians and four other teams that can't get out of their own way. So, no, this is not a team in decline.
Yeah. I think it's a team in an interesting spot, Joe. I think it's a team that probably is trying to thread the needle here. They know they've got enough talent to win a bad division. They also know that they're kind of at their breaking point payroll-wise, and they're going to have to it's going to take some delicate finessing to you know, keep this team not only on the right path but on the winning path, and to avoid, you know, taking a Kansas City Royals like plunge to you know, where you're not, I don't know, you could be almost accused of tanking, or the White Sox, right? Plunge where you know, you conduct a fire sale and then you start over. So it's going to be really interesting this winter.
All right, who else you got next?
Okay, I guess we talked about this, but this guy said, "Can you explain the Eric Gonzalez trade to me? I'm a little baffled by it." This from Larry Stewart from Galapagos? I don't know.
Galapagos?
Yeah, Galapagos.
I, you know what? I don't think you're going to hear, you would hear a complaint out of Eric Gonzalez about this move, because it opens things up for him and gives him a chance to play. And that really is all a player wants, is the opportunity to get out there and be able to get on the field. And he was not going to get that here with Eric, with Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez playing the two spots that he could, you know, best be out there on the field and second to short. This is the best thing for Eric Gonzalez, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I, I'm looking at it. How does it help the Indians? I think it gives them some depth. You know, like we were talking about, stockpiles a guy in the middle infield. You get a right-handed hitting outfielder. Maybe he's Guyer's replacement, like you were talking about. So we'll see. But obviously, this is the first move in what I think is going to be a pretty busy offseason for the Indians.
Okay. Let's take David Tuckey from Columbus, emailed the two of us, actually. And I read through David, if you're listening, I read through your email all the way through, and you sound like a completely reasonable and rational Indians fan, which is not the kind of guy who typically emails or tweets at me and Hoynsey. So
what are you doing tweeting?
Thank you for that. Yeah, you're just way out of place here. But let's see. You know, the gist of his email was basically, you know, hey, he doesn't blame the Dolans for not adding payroll at this time. And they're going to add payroll regardless because of, because of arbitration, salary increases. I think it'll be around the same total payroll, but, they've set records the last couple of years every year, staying in this frame of contention. So he doesn't, if David says he doesn't blame the Indians if they don't, because they're playing in a division where they could let guys like, if Kipnis goes out and plays left field and see if Naquin and Yandy Diaz can come in and contribute and coast along basically until the end of the season there. Do you see it that way? Do you not blame the Dolans if they don't add payroll again this year?
Well, I think kind of the attendance may have caught up to them a little bit here. They've drawn, like we've talked before, they've drawn 2 million fans once in the last 10 years. Now, attendance isn't the only revenue stream for a team, obviously. But I think for mid to small market clubs, it means a lot. And, they're deficit spending, and they're spending more than they're taking in. And I think they've kind of, Antonetti and the front office, obviously has been told that, we've got to kind of rein it in a little bit. We've got to try to be smart. But we still want to try to win. So yeah, I understand it. And I think there's still a possibility of these, like we've seen the last couple of years, that, if they are in a good, if they are in a good position, if they are, winning the division come the trade deadlines in July and August, they'll make a move. They'll add some help in hopes of, hopefully, progressing deeper into the postseason than they have the last 2 years. So I get it. Yeah, I do understand.
Yeah, and I think that point that you made there at the end is really good, is that if there is an opportunity to add a bat or add an arm that they really need, they've shown in the past that they're willing to go out and spend. The reason they got Jay Bruce in 2017 was because they were willing to spend money that the Yankees, right, of all teams, weren't willing to spend. So that's
the same thing with Josh Donaldson this time around.
Yeah. So That's an indication to me that this isn't a team that's or an ownership group that's, trying to pinch pennies or trying to be cheap or anything like that. I think that's a mischaracterization that a lot of fans want to throw out there. Would it be great if Jeff Bezos and Amazon came in and bought the team and had unlimited funds and could just spend and not care? That'd be super. The Indians would go from a small market team to a team that could play with the big boys, but that's not happening. I mean, the Indians have the ownership that they have, and that's not going to change anytime soon.
Got one more here from Joe. This is from Victor Fiore from Mayfield Heights. Do you have any idea why the Indians didn't make Michael Brantley a qualifying offer?
And from all, you know, Chris Antonetti told us in a conference call after that deadline passed that there's no communication or no prior knowledge about whether a guy will or won't accept a qualifying offer. So that would have been the only reason I would have thought that they wouldn't extend him that offer would be because they were worried that he would take it, and that would throw things off. You know, go ahead. If you were planning on not spending $17.9 million on one player, then you're going to not extend that offer because you risk him taking the offer.
Exactly, and I think that's why they didn't, because I think they thought there was a chance Michael might take the offer, and they have limited dollars to work with this winter, and I think they wanted to go in a different direction. So, you know, obviously they love Brantley. Brantley liked it here. It's the only, you know, big league team he's ever played with. And he's done, you know, did a great job. But I think, you know, just from everything you read, Brantley's probably going to get a multi-year deal. And it just doesn't – I don't think that was going to happen here. And I just thought that, you know, given Brantley's you know, kind of his injury history, I think they may have thought he might take it for 1 year and, you know, try to, you know, play, you know, get back-to-back healthy years behind him and then go out in the free agent market again.
Yeah, like you said, he's probably going to draw a multi-year offer. Where do you think, and where have you heard the possibility? I'm hearing the White Sox as a possibility, and that would just be awful to have to face him 19 times
yeah,
a year.
Yeah, that would not be great. But I think, you know, the White Sox are kind of in on a lot of people, it sounds like. Machado and Bryce Harper, you know, I think they've thought – they think
every team with the ability to spend money is going to be in on Bryce Harper and Machado. Yeah. The reality is there's like three teams that can actually
play
either of those guys.
But I think, you know, the White Sox feel their rebuilding process is far enough along that where they feel that if they added a Machado for 6, 7, 8 years, he could be the cornerstone of that club, and maybe Brantley is a backup plan to that. And you know, Atlanta has shown some interest, and I think Philadelphia has shown some interest. I know the Phillies were scouting Michael at the end of the year, the regular season.
Yeah, I think Philly might be doing that as like having Brantley as their backup plan if they go really hard at Bryce Harper.
Right.
I have a feeling Philly's going to get one of the two of them just for the way that they've been talking and the way that they actually have the ability to go out and spend because their money isn't all tied up. They might also try and move Carlos Santana.
I saw that. Yeah,
so that they can get Rhys Hoskins back to playing first base. But Carlos Santana, hey, what's Carlos Santana making? He's in that $20 million range
three
now.
Three for $60 million. So I don't know who's going to take him for two at $40 million for the next 2 years. I don't know. That's Carlos did all right, but I don't know where he's going to. If the Phillies move him, they're going to have to eat a bunch of that salary.
I was going to say the Phillies, if they trade him away, they'd have to pay for his April salaries for the next 2 years, right? Because he doesn't hit in April.
Right.
All right. We are sort of this far into the off season here. You know, the awards have been rolling out steadily. This past week, we saw the Rookie of the Year. I got to talk to a couple of Japanese TV stations who wanted to know why I voted for Shohei Ohtani as the Rookie of the Year in the AL. And it's like, guys,
oh,
come
yeah.
on.
Hey, there was a question. Yeah, some guy was some guy was complaining about. He didn't think Shohei Ohtani should. This guy Jack, I think I'm going to butcher his name. Bass Vice. He didn't think Ohtani should have won the AL Rookie of the Year because he had played, you know, he had played several years in Japan.
Well, I mean, so did Ichiro. Did you think Ichiro deserved it? I mean, that's Hoynesy. Who would you have voted for if you were casting a ballot for the AL Rookie of the Year?
That was a tough one for me. I thought Ohtani, you know, was remarkable what he did pitching and hitting. Mm-hmm. I thought he did a great job swinging the bat. Andujar, I thought I would have probably voted for him just because he played every day. Huh. But I wasn't even thinking about Ohtani's past, you know. I mean, what he had done in Japan. That would not have been the reason I didn't vote for him. But, I can understand why he voted because what he did was so unusual, you know, and Babe Ruth probably.
First player with 15 home runs and pitching 50 innings since Babe Ruth, that's saying a lot.
Maybe if he wouldn't have gotten hurt, you know, and had to stop pitching, I think I would have changed, you know, probably voted for him. But, you know, with the question, the award is named after Jackie Robinson, Rookie of the Year award. Mm-hmm. Jackie Robinson played in the Negro Leagues before he came to the big leagues.
Right.
I think you've got to, you know, look at it that way. I mean, the big leagues is a big step. If you played professionally somewhere else, I don't think it should be a reason you don't vote for a guy.
Yeah, I mean, if a guy spends 8-10 years in the minors and comes up and has an outstanding rookie season and he's, you know, 27, 28 years old, we've seen guys win the award at an advanced age, so... Ichiro was older when he won that because he had played longer in Japan than most guys who come over. But I'm not holding any of his previous outings. To me, the reason I voted my ballot was Ohtani, Andujar, and Joey Wendell from Tampa Bay, who, you know, I thought he was excellent when we saw him against the Indians. I thought he was excellent, and I believe Fangraphs WAR, he led the All American League rookies. So I I'm not catching any. I only caught a little bit of heat from New York fans who didn't like the didn't like my ballot.
I thought that was a good choice. I don't think you can argue. There's not much of an argument there. But it was a tough vote though. You know, usually Rookie of the Year is kind of cut and dry, but. But that was a tough one. That was and so the Japanese TV stations called you?
I did about a 20-minute interview with a Japanese television station, and hopefully, you know, nothing gets lost in translation. I don't want something coming out and say, well, you know, this Cleveland writer thinks Ohtani is this elite dominant player. I was like, no, I just think, you know, when he pitched, he was as good as any ace pitcher in the American League. And when he was at the plate, I thought he was as effective as any, you know, really good all-star type hitter at the plate. Watching him hit a 2-0 four-seam fastball from Corey Kluber 400 feet the opposite way in a game where Kluber was rolling, I thought that was pretty impressive. And, you know, he definitely lived up to all the hype and then some.
Yeah, I mean, in spring training, he looked overmatched. I thought this guy, I watched him, and I said, God, they got to send this guy down to AA. There's no way he can hit big league pitching. And he was facing Kluber. Kluber made him look silly in an exhibition game in Mesa, Arizona. And then, you know, the first time he faces Kluber, you know, I think, the second series of the season, he takes him deep, and then he took him deep again in Cleveland, right? I think.
He hit two home runs off of Clevinger.
Right.
Actually, when Kluber faced him in Cleveland, Kluber made him look silly. That was the game where Kluber threw a Maddux against the
Angels.
Three hit shutout on 98 pitches. That was pretty much the high point of the season for Corey Kluber, throwing that game. That was before he shaved his beard off.
That was right. It's like Samson.
Yeah, real quickly, the owners today re-upped with Rob Manfred. He's going to be the commissioner through 2024, I believe.
Right. So five-year deal.
Five-year deal, about a decade worth of Rob Manfred. What can Rob Manfred get done in the next 5 years that will leave his stamp on the game of baseball?
Well, he can probably. I think he's been working hard toward, you know, speeding the game up, taking the dead time out of the game, you know, and it has not sat well with the players. He's got what they've got, like 21 years of labor peace, which is, you know, I think is on the table now. He's got the basic agreement. They kind of, you know, they did, the owners did a great job against the players in the last two agreements. Mm-hmm. They've come out on top in a lot of areas, and the players are not happy. Tony Clark is not happy, the head of the Players Association. So it's going to be interesting to see just how Manfred can advance his program of, you know, pace of play, pitch clock, you know, put more action in the game. Is he going to take away the shift? You know, all that. You know, I think that's all on the table. And he, as a commissioner, he can just put that in, mm-hmm, without players' approval. So we'll see how that goes. I think that's his big agenda. You know, this is a guy that, you know, was at the forefront of the steroid testing plan and the labor relations plan under Bud Selig. And this is the guy that removed Wahoo from his uniforms. That was one of his biggest accomplishments
in the first half of his tenure is the elimination of Chief Wahoo. Yeah.
He went after the chief.
All right.
But I think this guy's a smart guy. You know, but he's going to have some problems with the Players Association in the years ahead here. I think, you know, you hear some saber rattling.
Acrimony. Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, none of that here. Hoynesy, another good one. We look forward to keeping an eye on all the movements and machinations and all that as the offseason progresses. We will talk to you again next week.
All right, Joe. Thanks, man.